Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gwendolyn Hall-Smith, who's a co-founder of Vermonters for a New Economy and the new executive director of the Public Banking Institute. She's the author of The Keys to Sustainable Cities, Meeting Human Needs, Transforming Community Systems, and a new workbook, Taking Actions for Sustainability, The Earth Cat Guide to Community Development. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gwendolyn Hall-Smith.
Why, thank you.
And A Vermont senator, I imagine you're working with, has introduced a bill, Senator Paulina, in the Vermont Senate that would grant the Vermont Economic Development Authority a banking license to direct 10% of the treasurer's bank deposits to VEDA for investment in Vermont. And I take it that this is popular at the grassroots, but the banking lobby have dominated the hearings so far before the Senate.
Yes, that is the way it's been unfolding. The banking lobby is a powerful voice in Montpelier, and we did manage to bring some of the activists and citizens who worked to get the question of public banking on the town meeting warning this year to the Senate the other day, and they testified in favor of a public bank and raised the issue of how the citizens' voices are heard in an arena where lobbyists have a clear advantage.
So in terms of what the Senate has heard so far, have they only heard for lobbyists, or have they heard at least from some proponents apart from Senator Paulina?
Yes, two proponents, Eric Esselstyn and Peg Elmer, both of whom were responsible for the successful town meeting votes in East Montpelier and Royalton, Vermont, were there the other day speaking in favor of a bank and speaking to the point of how the legislators hear from the citizens, because if all they ever listen to are the banking lobbyists and the bankers are opposed to this, and yet we have a groundswell of citizen support from around the state, how are citizens supposed to be able to get there during the working day with very little notice of hearings and express their views? Now, I believe that the Senate Finance Committee at this point has heard from a lot of people who've written to them and told them of their support for public banking, and of course, the evidence of 18 town meeting votes going forward with overwhelming support, I think, was also a really strong message to the legislature. So I'm hopeful that they're going to pass this legislation this year.
Well, clearly public banks at least have a model in North Dakota. And the Bank of North Dakota was founded about 100 years ago during the last Gilded Age as an alternative to the plutocratic control of banks. And this bank is quite thriving, provides, it's been a 100-year safe steward of state funds, providing loans at affordable rates and steering a lot of revenue towards public projects and infrastructure. And we don't have in the United States infrastructure banks like they do in all the other advanced democracies. So it's pretty extraordinary that you have this model in North Dakota that's thrive for 100 years, and yet very few other states have, except now for apparently Vermont, have picked up on it.
Right. Well, that isn't an accident, of course. Every time a state tries to do it, the banks get in the way and actually actively undermine it. Vermont did pass a state bank back in 1806, as it turns out. Maryland had one until the latter part of the 20th century, as I understand. And there are a number of countries worldwide that use this form of public financial management. Radical fringe economies like Germany and Brazil and India, Taiwan and Costa Rica have public banks as one of their main sources of public finance. So, and those are some of the most successful Western economies in the world. It's hard to look at the whole situation and say that this is a foolhardy venture. It's a fairly rational venture, especially in an era of increasingly risky investments in the larger banks since the crash of 2008 and the changes in the banking rules that actually make depositors the same as investors in banks, coming after the derivatives holders and the repurchase agreements holders in the case of a bank failure. You know, depositors these days in banks are the same as uninsured creditors or unsecured creditors. It's not that good a picture. And the fact that our state deposits of which are average $350 million a day, are secured, allegedly, from a letter of credit from the U.S. Federal Home Loan Bank, means that we're essentially backing our state deposits with the full faith and credit of the banking system. And I just don't think that's as wise, frankly, as the full faith and credit of the citizens in the state of Vermont.
Again, I'm speaking with Gwendolyn Hall-Smith, who's a co-founder of Vermonters for a New Economy and the new executive director of the Public Banking Institute. She's the author of The Keys to Sustainable Cities, Meeting Human Needs, Transforming Community Systems, and a new workbook, Taking Action for Sustainability, The EarthCat Guide to Community Development. Well, I've spoken with Senator Bernie Sanders a few times about this issue, particularly about the post office. He's trying to save the post office along with Senator Elizabeth Warren. And one of the ways to revive the post office, which is being deliberately bankrupted by the Congress, they have suggested restoring post office banking, which I think operated throughout the country up until about the 1960s. And of course, post office banks are huge in Japan, Germany, China, and South Korea. And the Japan Post Office Bank is ranked as one of the world's largest financial institutions based on its assets. So there are obviously efforts here to find alternatives to the big banks and to Wall Street. What's your sense of going forward, what it's going to require, given the apparent power of the banking lobby?
Well, I think the kind of thing you're doing right now, educating people about the alternatives and helping people understand that this isn't the only way to go. Post office banks would be a wonderful thing because, especially in Vermont, where we have a small post office in every little town in the state, but we don't actually have banks in every town in the state. So it would give access to those type of services to a lot of the people in Vermont who currently don't even have access to bank accounts or pay very high rates for their access to banking services. I think the fact that the post office could probably make a profit from it will also help save the post office, which for Vermont is an important issue because our post offices are more than places that deliver our mail. They're the center of a lot of our community lives because we don't actually have a lot of big cities in Vermont. Sometimes the post office and the town hall and the church are the only thing in town. And without the post office there, we'll really suffer a loss of our rural character. So I applaud Bernie Sanders for taking that on. And I think that educating people and educating the public and educating the Congress and educating all the legislators about the alternatives is really important because it isn't the only way to go. Banks aren't the only way that we have to manage public finance and our credit accounts and checking accounts. We really need to start looking at money as more of a public utility and less of a privately owned commodity because it is so essential to our economic health. Most people don't understand how it works and don't understand how the profits accrue within the system to work against the better interest of the vast majority of us. And yet, really, all it's needed for is as a means of exchange, a store of value, a unit of account, standard functions of money. We really need to look at how to make those functions more democratic and more at the service of the vast majority of our citizens rather than the few wealthy ones.
So,
who tend to be the shareholders of the banks.
So, Gwendolyn Hall-Smith, again, the co-founder of Vermonters for a New Economy and the new executive director of the Public Banking Institute, specifically in terms of this proposal in Vermont to create a public bank, you're using an existing vehicle, I guess, the Vermont Economic Development Authority. That's a nonprofit agency that makes loans. You want to turn that into a bank and then and put 10% of the state's funds in it, right?
Correct. And it's actually a little more than a nonprofit agency. It's an arm of the state, an instrumentality of the state. The state established it, the state governs it. It's just got a firewall between the state political authorities and the banking services that it offers, which is an important concept for people that criticize the whole enterprise by saying, oh, we don't want government running a bank and how are politics going to interfere with the operation of the bank? Because even in North Dakota, there's a very strong firewall between politics and banking, as there should be. We don't want loans going to cronies of political leaders, et cetera. You want it to be done on a rational basis that's based on what's good for the economy in the state of Vermont. So VITA already does the riskiest part of running a public bank. They already do the lending. In fact, they do the lending to the groups and enterprises that the bankers don't necessarily want to lend to because they're higher risk loans. So VITA already does even more risky lending than the banks do. And establishing VITA with a banking license and giving it the ability to work in partnership with the state chartered banks and credit unions to make more credit available to businesses in Vermont and to municipalities in Vermont and to homeowners in Vermont that need access to credit and access to lending services isn't actually taking on more risks than we already have. The kind of risks that banks manage, you know, which are typically known as liquidity risks, right, where you need the money that you have in the account to pay the bills, and meanwhile you're lending it out for the long-term needs of a particular enterprise or municipality, is something that banks deal with all the time. That's why we feel it's important for VITA to have a banking license, so they have the tools available to them that banks have available, like a window at the Federal Reserve, access to interbank overnight lending, et cetera, to help manage the risks that bankers are all very familiar with. You know, liquidity risk, default risk, interest rate risk, all of those things are something that all, the banking sector deals with day in and day out.
Well, and of course they get that.
Sometimes not.
Right. But all the time they get their money from the Fed at an incredibly low interest rate, right?
Right. So that would give the public sector the same access to that free money, essentially, which how is that wrong for our infrastructure and for our economic development projects?
Well, that's always struck me as being extraordinary, how the banks, you know, get money at such a low interest rate and then charge it back, you know, 18 to 20% on credit cards, et cetera, getting it about a 1 or 2%. And they've been doing this has been going on for decades. So
it's a good business model if you can get it. You know, make money out of nothing and charge other people to use it.
Right.
Great business model. And all we're trying to do is mobilize that business model for the public benefit.
So I take it, though, when the public hear these kind of arguments, as presumably our listeners here today are hearing, they get it. I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why it passed town meeting vote in Vermont. People heard the argument, got it, said, yeah, that makes sense. Vermonters have a wealth of common sense, and this is just plain old common sense. Let's not put our money, our taxpayers' money, into banks that are investing it elsewhere and then borrow it back for our investments here. We'll just lend ourselves our own money, thank you very much, and make our investments here ourselves. That's really the essence of public banking. Right now, with the state deposits going primarily to TD Bank North, that means that Vermonters' taxpayer dollars are helping invest in the XL pipeline up in Canada, which is another thing that a lot of Vermonters are opposed to. And meanwhile, we've set an ambitious state goal of becoming 80% dependent on renewables by 2030. That's a $23 billion price tag that we yet don't understand how to pay for.
So in other words, people's own political values are the banks that they're forced to make their deposits in because of the lack of choice and the lack of a public alternative are making investments in using their depositors' money to make investments that are against the wishes and values of these very same depositors.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And meanwhile, we're short of money to invest in the renewable alternatives that Vermont so badly wants. So we could take the same money and make the same business decisions around energy lending, which in North Dakota has proven to be very smart, only lend it for energy projects in Vermont that are renewable that can help us be more self-reliant over the next several years instead of continuing to underwrite the fossil fuel industry, which is not only catastrophic from an environmental point of view, but also from a risk point of view. We really need to get out of fossil fuels. Everybody knows that. So why are we continuing to invest in them long term as if they were a smart thing to do with our money? It's really not.
So just
there's also a fairly strong divestment movement in Vermont to try and get the state treasurer to take our pension funds and our other long-term investments out of fossil fuels because of the risks associated with that. And these two movements really do sort of complement each other.
Just in closing, Gwendolyn Hall-Smith, I take it there are other states in this country that are doing what you're doing in Vermont, that are looking into public banking, and there are a number of proposals in play, I take it. How are they doing in other states relative to how you're doing in Vermont?
Well, currently Ellen Brown is running for treasurer in California on a public banking platform, so that's going to provide some visibility to the movement there. As I understand, in California, they're looking at it on a city and a county level. The city of San Francisco and Sonoma are working on public banking initiatives. And other states like Maine and Arizona and New Mexico, Rhode Island, are all also looking at public banks. And I just got back, as I said, from Michigan. I was in Detroit for several days because the cities there are looking very favorably at public banking as an alternative to the kind of situation they've been put in by the banks with the lending that was done to them back in the heyday of credit default swaps and interest rate swaps that have systematically bankrupted many cities in Michigan. So we're looking to hold our national conference coming up in October in Michigan as a way of helping the cities there that are under emergency management and otherwise struggling to help revive their economies understand the alternatives that are available to them as we move forward with public banking initiatives.
Well, Gwendolyn Hall-Smith, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Gwendolyn Hall-Smith, who's the co-founder of Vermonters for a New Economy and the new executive director of the Public Banking Institute. She's the author of The Keys to Sustainable Cities, Meeting Human Needs, Transforming Community Systems, and a new workbook, Taking Action for Sustainability, The EarthCat Guide to Community Development. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about how the CEO of Time Warner Cable has rewarded himself an $80 million golden parachute for losing a job he only held for 3 months.